You don't regret that people might have lost important income to support their lives?
Exactly. No. I think it was more important to reduce the federal deficit from $2 trillion to close to zero.
Did you reduce the federal deficit?
No, we didn't.
No, they didn't. Good job, Doge Bro. Nailed it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
That's one of the reasons.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Lots of reasons today.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
Unfortunately.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Hey. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internet around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today when we will, I think, be sort of all over the place as the nation and the world melt down, and as some of us out here in Los Angeles literally melt down from some record heat, as we do our best to both keep up with all of this and share with you the stuff that actually matters. So, wish us luck in that regard. First up today, a few quick notes, beginning with this year's Hope on the Horizon. Voters took to the polls across the land of Lincoln on Tuesday, the great state of Illinois, for their statewide primaries for the critical 2026 midterm elections, with the Chicago Tribune reporting that early and mail voting in Chicago has outpaced similar election cycles this year for some reason or another. We will have any noteworthy reported results or reported problems at the polls on our next thrilling Bradcast. But voters in the Windy City apparently came out to the polls in the cold on Tuesday, facing down sub-freezing temperatures in in early spring. I think it's early. Are we still late winter? I don't know.
This is still considered, I think, late winter.
Is it?
Yeah, we're right in that weird, turbulent bridge season.
That's weird because it's 93 degrees out here in Los Angeles today.
Yeah.
We got half of the country facing cold weather and storms, and the other half, us out here in L.A., for example, facing crazy hot weather, shattering heat records. Much as we had warned last week would be the case that we would be seeing across the nation this week. Yes, it is insane. 93 degrees out here, about 20 degrees above the average for this time of year. And while we had warned last week about one half of the country facing blizzards and cold and the other half shattering heat records, well, we actually failed, Desi Doyen.
We missed
one important point.
Yes.
We failed to give a heads up for what our friends in Hawaii, including our listeners at Bradcast affiliate KAKU on Maui, would have to be contending with this week, including just record rainfall. Those rains did, in fact, come, Desiree. I think you mentioned today they had what out there in? Do I remember this correctly, what you told me?
Well, I'm not sure what you remember, but yeah, they had nearly 4 feet of rain in 5 days in a particular part of Maui. That was just last week. 4 feet.
4 feet of rain in 5 days.
Well, other places got like 20 inches. So huge flash floods and washed out roads, bridges, houses were washed away.
Well,
Very dramatic.
We heard about some of that drama from our friends at Maui's 88.5 FM last night, KAKU. After yesterday's broadcast, engineer Brada Tony Midnight, yes, that is his on-air name, he touched base to say, quote, "Aloha from Maui, KAKU engineer Brada Tony Midnight here." Brada apparently means like brother.
Ah, nice.
Although it's spelled like my name plus D-A-H, Brada. Anyway, Brada Tony notes the radio station survived the 100-year storm Overall, he said it's taking a while for the sun to come out. Maui took a larger amount of the storm than the other islands, as Des noted. Flooding, roadway damage near the coastal areas. One couple here had their house taken away by the flood. Trees knocked down and more flooding. Our online streaming link is down for now till our backup PC is rebooted. Hopefully it's back up by now. The power outages during the storm was a nuisance to everybody in the islands. Near 100,000-plus islanders went without power for almost a day. Overall, he notes, however, KAKU is still live on the air. Aloha and mahalo from Maui County. Well, aloha and thanks back at ya, Brada. By the way, I say we honorarily renamed today's show the Bradacast, dedicated to our friends on Maui. For sticking in there, staying on the air, keeping the folks out on Maui informed in dangerous times like we have seen out there over the last few days and certainly the last few years. Folks who have had to put up with far too many horrors over those years. So hang in there, guys. We love you. And thank you, Brada Tony, for checking in. Greatly appreciated. More on Hawaii and a whole bunch of the other messes around the nation and the world with Desi Doyen on our latest Green News Report coming up a little bit later this hour. Beyond that, speaking of disasters, in this case, perhaps a new disaster in the making at the site of an old disaster out here in Southern California. We begin with a follow-up from yesterday's broadcast and the news that I believe we were the first to break on this program during my conversation with staff attorney Talia Nimmer of the Center for Biological Diversity. And not to brag or anything, and nothing against the New York Times, of course, but, well, it does appear that we did beat them to this story by about 7 hours. In breaking this news on yesterday's broadcast, I did receive an alert from the Times very late last night, and I'm glad to see the Times confirming it. I realize they don't have the resources that we do here at the Brad Blog World News headquarters, but still, it was a very good story, guys, and as the Times confirmed late last night, as noted by Talia Nimmer on this show yesterday afternoon, oil has, in fact, begun flowing through a pipeline near Santa Barbara, California, for the first time in more than a decade after the Trump administration ordered offshore production to resume there despite strong objections from California state officials and, in fact, as we discussed with Talia, ongoing violations of California law that the Trump federal government seems to be simply bigfooting and ignoring. You know, the way tyrants and fascists who don't give a damn about the rule of law do. The pipeline, the Times explains, as we did yesterday, had been shut down since 2015 when a rupture caused one of the worst oil spills in state history near Refugio State Beach, just south of Santa Barbara, releasing more than 100,000 gallons of oil onto California's Central Coast and covering birds and beaches in tar. Now, that more than 100,000 gallon number seems to have come from the then owners of the pipeline, ExxonMobil. Local advocates suggest the spill was more than 400 or 450,000 gallons. The companies always seem to lowball it for some reason. The new owner of that pipeline, Texas-based Sable Offshore, which purchased the pipeline and three oil platforms from ExxonMobil in 2024, they announced on Monday that the company had, in fact, resumed oil production on Saturday at the direction of Energy Secretary Chris Wright and after Trump invoked the Defense Production Act, which the administration says supersedes state law, allows them to do anything they want, no matter if it's unlawful or not in a particular state, at least as they see it. Now, Talia Nimmer had reported on yesterday's show that the company claimed oil had been restarted through the pipeline that ruptured back in 2015, causing that horrific disaster, and that the pipeline is still not fully restored up to state requirements. state standards, that it is still corroding and dangerous without the pressure sensors and shutoff valves that advocates have long been calling for this pipeline and others. The moves came, the Times reports, as oil prices have spiked during the Iran war and the completely predictable restrictions of access to the Strait of Hormuz, the major route for transporting Persian Gulf oil. Now, Talia also reported on this show that the use of the Wartime Defense Production Act to start up a single pipeline was, in fact, unprecedented. And, of course, we should note that Trump has claimed this is not even a war. So does he even have the authority to even use that law in this way at all if this is not a war?
Apparently that's going to be litigated now.
And in any case, it's such a tiny percentage of California and U.S. oil overall, it's unlikely to make any difference whatsoever in the global price of oil that, yes, continues to spike. The opening of the California pipeline set off a new legal battle between the Trump administration and California leaders, the paper reports. Sable Offshore had been trying to restart that pipeline for more than a year, but hadn't been able to secure the required permits. Well, we can work around that, can't we? Just go to our pal Donnie Trump in the White House, and he'll do whatever we ask him to do, apparently. State and local officials have said that Sable had not sufficiently repaired damage on the pipeline that led to the 2015 spill, with its project stalled. Sable, last year, asked the Trump administration for help in bypassing state regulations. And yes, on Friday, they got that help when Trump signed an executive order invoking the Cold War-era Defense Production Act, typically used for national emergencies, not to help a friend's fossil fuel industry business.
Especially not over the objections of states, because, you know, Republicans used to pretend to care about states'
yes,
rights
did,
and
wasn't
state
it?
Sovereignty.
Yeah.
That was very cute,
was
wasn't
darling.
It?
Darling. Sable's chief executive officer, Jim Flores, said in a statement that the company looked forward to, quote, working with Trump to take all necessary steps to deliver the energy necessary for the security and defense of the country. Yeah, we need to risk covering hundreds of miles of coastline around Santa Barbara because it's necessary for the security and defense of the country. Sure, yes, that's the ticket. Governor Gavin Newsom of California vowed last week to fight back against the Trump administration. The state earlier this year sued the administration over a different attempt to get the pipeline flowing. Newsom called the latest attempt to restart the pipeline illegal. Quote, Donald Trump started a war, admitted it would spike gas prices nationwide, and told Americans it was a small price to pay. In the statement, Newsom said now he's using this crisis of his own making to attempt what he's wanted to do for years, open California's coast for his oil industry friends. For now, this is a mess, a legal one for now, if not yet a literal one, but give it time. Lots of legal actions are underway challenging all of this in every direction, in state and federal court and so forth. Talia Nimmer told us on yesterday's show that her group, the Center for Biological Diversity, and the state would be in front of a state judge this morning over this, seeking to enforce the preliminary injunction to prevent the use of the pipeline that had already been granted by the judge to them during prior court action, requiring the company to notify the court once it had obtained final approvals to restart use of the pipeline and then to wait 10 court days before actually restarting it. Now, none of that appears to have happened. With the executive order issued by Trump on Friday and the company restarting the pipeline over the weekend on Saturday. So they didn't notify the court. They didn't wait 10 days. They don't give a damn about the rule of law, apparently. Talia touched base after Tuesday morning's court hearing on all of this via email to let us know the following. She said, quote, today the judge kept the injunction in play, said the parties will appear in court again in April to resolve the issue, which sounds like good news. But as Nimmer continues, quote, it's a victory for California that the judge kept this injunction in place, but it's outrageous that Sable has been pushing through oil through these pipelines in defiance of this clear court order every day since the restart. Every second, these pipelines are pumping oil, she says, puts California and our iconic coast and wildlife at risk of another devastating spill. She said, I look forward to being back in court soon to explain why this illegally restarted pipeline system needs to be shut down. Trump and his cronies won't stop trying to prop up oil industry profits, but we'll keep fighting to protect California's coastal communities and hold Sable accountable for its flagrant disregard of environmental laws. That's Talia Nimmer, the staff attorney, one of the staff attorneys at the Center for Biological Diversity. That follows the center's and the Wishtoyos Foundation's preliminary injunction request that was filed last year. So they got this preliminary injunction. They go to court today. The judge says, yes, that injunction is still in place. Let's talk about it in April. Meanwhile, I guess allowing the pipeline to dangerously flow along the California coast for the next several weeks until this is heard again in court.
Keep your fingers crossed that there's not another oil spill.
Sable announced it had resumed oil production from one of its three offshore platforms. It was storing oil in onshore tanks while attempting to restart the pipeline in July. The court issued that injunction, which Sable now appears to be ignoring, as the fight against the use of the corroding pipeline that fails safety and environmental rules continues. Anyway, you heard it here first on yesterday's broadcast, which included a whole lot more on all of this. If you missed it or you want to hear it again, you can download it for free. Thanks to those of you who support our work by hitting a donate button at bradblog.com. Meanwhile, speaking of Trump's disastrous war on Iran that he has been lying about from day one, because really, does he know how to do anything else but lie about things?
No.
I mean, that's just what he does.
Right.
With the war a continuing disaster at this point, with seemingly no way out after Trump either ignored or didn't know about all of the things that everyone else seems to have known about for decades, that Iran would shut down the Strait of Hormuz if the regime faced an existential threat, that it would target U.S. Military bases and so forth in neighboring countries. In an attempt to make it sound like, you know, what he did was not insane and was not rejected as the terrible idea that it is by previous U.S. presidents who actually bothered to, you know, listen to their advisors and to experts on such things. President Donald Trump told reporters on Monday that one of his predecessors told him he wished he had been the one to bomb Iran. Sure they did, Donnie. As NBC reports, it appears Trump did not speak to any of the four living former presidents. An aide for George W. Bush told NBC News that, quote, they haven't been in touch. While an aide to Bill Clinton told NBC News that whoever Trump was referring to was not Clinton. An Obama aide said, quote, no recent conversations have taken place between Barack Obama and Trump. And a source familiar with the matter said the former president Trump was referring to was not Joe Biden. So maybe it was a former president who visited Donald Trump in a dream. You don't know. It could have been.
Or like Nixon walking down the hallways of the White House, yelling at the portraits.
Speaking to the ghost of Abraham Lincoln. Maybe that was it.
There you go.
The White House did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the denials on Monday night for some odd reason. Earlier in the day, Trump claimed twice to have spoken to a former president about Iran. He said, quote, I've spoken to a certain president who I like, actually, a past president, former president. He said, I wish I did it. I wish I did, but they didn't do it. I'm doing it. That's what Trump said at a lunch for Kennedy Center board members. You remember the Kennedy Center, the place that he wrecked just before wrecking the Middle East. Later in the day, Trump repeated the same claim in the Oval Office. He said, quote, I spoke to one of the former presidents who I actually like, and he said, I wish I did what you did. Now, the only one of those four presidents that Trump has repeatedly claimed to, quote, actually like in recent days is Bill Clinton. Asked by a reporter to elaborate on which president he was speaking to, Trump would not specify. He said it wasn't Bush. And then he said, quote, I don't want to say, when he was asked if it was Clinton, I don't want to, quote, I don't want to say because a member of a party, they have Trump derangement syndrome, but it's not somebody that happens to like me, and I like that person who's a smart person, but that person said, I wish I did it, okay? But I don't want to get into who. I don't want to get him in trouble, Trump said. And, oh, he continued, and maybe he'd be proud, he said, about the former president. And I could even ask him that. Would you like me to reveal your name? Sure, Donnie, go ahead and do it. So he was also busy either lying about or revealing that he was kept clueless about the other most predictable thing beyond the Strait of Hormuz that everyone knew that Iran would do. That, in fact, Iran would attack U.S. assets, military bases, diplomatic outposts, etc., in neighboring Middle East countries if they were attacked. But on Monday, Trump didn't seem embarrassed to admit that he had no idea about any of that. Or at least now he claims, before launching this unbelievably ill-considered war.
Look what happened. In the last 2 weeks, they weren't supposed to go after all these other countries in the Middle East. Those missiles were set to go after them. So they hit Qatar, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, Kuwait. Nobody expected that. We were shocked.
Nobody expected? They weren't supposed to go after that? Really? Experts have said that's not true. That was part of what most people understood would be their plan if they felt like they were attacked. So that was Monday. Nobody knew. Nobody expected it. Who knew? And I got to say, you know, I avoid playing Trump as much as I can on this show because it's always just a mountain of lies and his voice is like, you know, nails on the blackboard to many of us. But I want to play his response to this on Tuesday after being asked about it by Fox News' Peter Ducey. Is that,
yes.
Is that boy Ducey?
Yes,
okay.
Baby Ducey. Son of the previous Ducey.
He was asked about this during a press avail, I guess, on Tuesday. Because I got to say, he really does not sound well. I don't know if this is just me or if you might agree, but here's the follow-up to Monday's lie or embarrassing admission about this from Trump on Tuesday.
You were talking about Iran a couple times today and what they did after Epic Fury began. You said they hit Qatar, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, Kuwait. Nobody expected that. We were shocked. Are you surprised that nobody briefed you ahead of time that might be their retaliation?
Nobody. The greatest experts, nobody thought they were going to hit. They were, I wouldn't say friendly countries. They were like neutral. They lived with them for years. Peter, they were going to take over the Middle East. They were going to knock out Israel with their nuclear weapon. But after we knocked out their nuclear potential weapon, they started building missiles, thousands and thousands of missiles. And they were going to do it with missiles while they developed. These are sick people. While they developed nuclear, somehow they were going to start at a different site because that site was, you saw the site, the mountain. They were going to go into a certain area, which we know exactly where it is, and they were going to do that. And it's incredible what we've done. I tell you, the job we've done.
So he kind of sounds like he's not well. He's slurring his words. We were going to Iran was going to knock out Israel with a nuclear weapon before we stopped them? Really? Nobody thinks they have a nuclear weapon, much less would use it to attack Israel. And he just, I don't know, he just does not sound well to me. I think he's kind of melting down before our eyes. At least when Joe Biden was, you know, physically melting down, he always made sense what he said. I didn't think he was losing his mind at all, even as he was physically deteriorating.
Yeah, Trump's verbal logorrhea just sounds like a bunch of squirrels chasing each other in a cage.
I mean, he sounds like he's losing, you know, both his physically and mental capacity, especially as this is a crisis of his own making that continues to spiral out of control in the Middle East, and he doesn't seem to know what the hell to do about it. Anyway, over the weekend, Trump pretty much begged other nations, including rival China, to rescue him from his own cell phone in the Strait of Hormuz, as TPM's David Kurtz described it at his morning memo newsletter. In social media posts and news interviews, the president concocted new and plausible rationales on the fly for why other nations owed it to him to pitch in to thwart Iran's stranglehold on the vital shipping channel, which, frankly, you might have thought, if the administration took into account the likelihood of this happening, as has been, you know, known for decades, it's one of the reasons that Iran has not been attacked and has held so much sway in the region for decades because they have that control of that narrow channel. You would think that if the administration had taken all of that into account, that they would have kind of worked things out with other nations to work together before Trump's strike on Iran. If they actually, you know, as they say, well, we knew about it all in advance. Really? Well, then why didn't you work with your allies in advance instead of begging them now? The headlines on Monday, notes Kurtz, were almost comical. Washington Post said Trump urges world to help open Strait of Hormuz. Pretty please. Politico said Trump demands, quote, about seven countries join coalition to police Iran's Strait of Hormuz. Good luck with that. Wall Street Journal said White House tries to build coalition on Iran to address energy crisis. Now he's trying to build a coalition? Because it kind of seems a little late for that. Champ, sorry, buddy. Maybe you shouldn't have spent so much time and energy bad-mouthing those very same countries, most of them our own allies, and slapping their exports to the U.S. with punitive tariffs for the past year or so, maybe? Bloomberg said Trump floats delaying summit with China's Xi if China doesn't help in Hormuz. Yes, he's demanding that China help him out in the Persian Gulf. And I believe that summit may now be officially delayed. New York Times said nations respond with caution to Trump's call to send warships to the Strait of Hormuz. And while accurate, writes Kurtz, the headlines do not quite do justice. The mix of magical thinking, narcissistic indignation, and pseudo-economics that Trump spent the weekend trafficking in. Trump, who was reportedly warned in advance by the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff about the eminently foreseeable Iranian response of closing the strait, is left to grovel on the international stage now. Though in classic Trump fashion, he compensates for his weakness by berating, lashing out, threatening other countries. Oh, well, that'll get him to bail you out and save your bacon, Donnie. With oil executives warning the White House that oil prices are not likely to retreat anytime soon and the crisis is likely to worsen, it is slowly dawning on Trump that he has an election year nightmare on his hands. Oh, yeah, that election that you were already getting killed at with your plunging approval ratings before taking the nation to war for reasons still unknown without any sort of actual strategy to get out. And yeah, all of a sudden, you've made your party's hopes even worse as the November election approaches. Great job, Donnie. But in addition to gifting Russia the lifting of sanctions on Russian oil to try and save your ass, despite the fact that Russia seems to be supplying targeting information to Iran that has arguably already killed American service members. Well, now Trump is appealing to China to come into the matter. As Kurtz explains, Trump's invitation for China to assert itself more vigorously in the Middle East and to take on more of the U.S. Navy's century-plus duty of keeping shipping lanes free and open is a huge capitulation to the rival already eager to flex its own navy. So, yeah, this has been a U.S. domain for decades, more than a century, in fact, and now Donald Trump is inviting China's navy to come in and bail out the U.S. Navy and the U.S. itself and the world, for that matter. No U.S. interest, argues Kurtz, is too valuable for Trump to forsake for his own political expediency. And as of Tuesday, still no country, not China, not Europe, not anyone else, has agreed to come to the aid of the U.S. in the Gulf, which has infuriated Trump, even though he continues to say, well, we don't need anybody. We don't need any help. But then he says, please, somebody come and help us. And he can't understand why, after he spent the last year berating our NATO allies, threatening to break up the alliance, slamming them with tariffs and everything else, he can't understand why they don't want to put their own people in harm's way and be dragged into another forever war in the Middle East to help bail out Donald Trump out of the mess that he created for himself. Trump just doesn't get that. How could they not want to come help him after all that he's done for them? What a dope. But an increasingly insane one, it seems to me. And for the first time in this second term of office, it seems that one of his top officials is actually now willing to admit as much out loud, sort of. The director of National Counterterrorism Center, a retired Green Beret, longtime supporter of Donald Trump, says that he has resigned his post over the war in Iran. Well, good for him. Quote, I cannot in good conscience support the ongoing war in Iran. Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation, Joe Kent said in a statement posted on X on Tuesday, adding, quote, it is clear that we started this war due to pressure from Israel and its powerful American lobby. Kent worked under Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, and the two were political allies. Oh, I see. Well, it's your move, Tulsi. Didn't you join with Trump on the basis that he would not commit the U.S. into any more stupid foreign forever wars? Why, yes. Yes, you did, Tulsi Gabbard. Are you going to resign next? NBC reports that Gabbard has kept a low profile since the war started and has previously criticized U.S. military interventions abroad. Kent wrote in a letter to Trump posted on X that he supported the president's values during his first term. He had values during his first term? I had not noticed. Which values, Joe? Was it when he sicked a mob of his supporters to overthrow the U.S. government? Those values? Are those ones you supported? Well, yes, apparently Joe Kent did. But Kent said that Trump has been wrongly swayed by the Israelis, and he could not support, quote, sending the next generation off to fight and die in a war that serves no benefit to the American people nor justifies the cost of American lives. Kent served in the Army Special Forces. He undertook 11 combat deployments during a 20-year career. He later worked at the CIA. His wife, Shannon Kent, a Navy cryptologist, died in a terrorist bombing in Syria in 2019. Trump and his supporters have said the intelligence community sought to undermine the president in the past, and therefore he needed needed radical overhaul. Kent was apparently part of that radical overhaul. So this is not, you know, some never Trumper. This is a Trumper. But apparently the radical overhaul now includes quitting him. At least one of them doing so today, finally. And make no mistake, Kent is a radical. Despite doing the right thing here, his placement at the center was part of a The National Counterterrorism Center was part of a wider effort by the administration to put trusted loyalists and partisan activists in senior government positions in intelligence, law enforcement, and diplomacy. He called January 6 rioters, quote, political prisoners, and has had ties to a man the police say was a member of the Proud Boys. Emails by Gabbard's office showed Kent pressing intelligence analysts to change their assessments regarding Trump's false claims that Trendaragua was a gang operated by the Venezuelan Maduro regime.
That guy.
That guy. He asked the analysts, who are just supposed to call balls and strikes, to please change it to be more close to what the administration's false view about all of this is. And while you're at it, add criticism of the immigration policies by the Biden administration. That guy. So, yeah, this guy was a corrupt cuckoo as well, but even he has had enough at this point to say that he's had enough and he's stepping down. Any other rats feel like fleeing this sinking ship? And speaking of rats, the Doge Bros, they're speaking up because they're being forced to in legal depositions. You ever wonder how these little 20-something-year-old punks, who they are and who Trump and Elon Musk actually hired to give access to the nation's most closely guarded information and secrets and decisions? Well, just you wait, because it's worse than you thought. That's straight ahead on today's broadcast, plus Green News Report and maybe more. I'm Brad Friedman, and you're listening to the broadcast.
You're listening to the broadcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.
Yes, they can. Have you met the Doge Bros? Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Weren't those Doge Bros supposed to be the super geniuses? Thanks, by the way, to our bumper music Sherpa friend, KCP, for a suggestion of that song today.
No one can be that stupid. That's
we'll
a
see.
Good song.
We'll see. 1 year after Elon Musk began an unprecedented attempt to eliminate swaths of the federal government, in theory to lower the federal deficit by what he promised to be trillions of dollars at the time, newly released deposition videos are providing a never-before-seen look at two of the 20-something-year-old Doge Bros who were incredibly handed responsibility for the largest mass termination of federal grants at the National Endowment for the Humanities in history. This was only one aspect of the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or Doge, where these little Elon wannabe boys were unleashed to wreak havoc in almost all cases unlawfully on the federal government. But the testimony from these little punks who don't look much older than high school kids, barely out of high school, and yet they, you know, they have these Aryan blue eyes of psychopaths, frankly, as I see them in these videos. It's nonetheless quite revealing, these videos, it seems to me. According to the depositions and other materials released as part of a civil lawsuit released to the massive funding cuts, massive in one sense, but really a drop in the bucket to the overall federal budget, ultimately failing to lower the deficit at all, much less by the $2 or $3 trillion that Musk has promised and then lied repeatedly about. The Doge Bros appear to have relied on ChatGPT in order to identify more than $100 million in grants in this particular case related to diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, the sworn enemy of every Fox News viewer from Donald Trump on down, and these $100 million in grants that were canceled because of these boys. As mentioned, that's a drop in the bucket for the federal government, but the grants amount to the livelihoods for untold thousands of people who saw their previously, you know, federally approved work just ended by these kids who had no clue what they were actually doing, as these videos that I'll share with you in a second make instantly clear. When President Donald Trump returned to office last January, he empowered Musk to slash spending as a lead advisor in the newly created DOGE, ABC News reports. Within days, all agencies were directed to put DEI staff on leave, and related programs were shuttered because, you know, diversity and equity and inclusion. I can't even say those words without thinking which one of them is the worst of them. All three terrible. We'd hate to have inclusion and equity. Diversity. Oh, that must be destroyed. Am I right, boys? In these lengthy depositions, two DOGE employees, Nate Kavanaugh and Justin Fox, you made history, boys, just not maybe the way you thought you would. They defended the effort to cut, quote, useless agencies as part of DOGE's obscenely failed attempt to reduce the federal deficit. Quote, "You don't regret that people might have lost important income to support their lives?" an attorney asked Kavanaugh about the grant cancellations. He replied, quote, "No, I think it was more important to reduce the federal deficit from $2 trillion to close to zero. I will let you hear some of the choice responses thereafter from Kavanaugh and the attorney.
"You don't regret that people might have lost important income to support their lives?
No. I think it was more important to reduce the federal deficit from $2 trillion to close to zero."
"Did you reduce the federal deficit?"
"No, we didn't."
"This is a history of the HIV/AIDS prison movement and its legacies in the United States. My book project narrates how activists fought the convergence of HIV/AIDS and incarceration from inside and outside prisons across the Reagan through Clinton years, and argues that this organizing holds legacies in the prison abolition movement of the 1990s to today. This is one of the grants that you or Mr. Fox identified as craziest of any age, is that right?"
"That's right."
"Why did you identify this as one of the craziest grants?"
Because it references feminist and queer insights into prison abolition and LGBTQ studies."
"Any other reasons?"
"No."
"Examining military service from the margins, the complicated service discussion series will bring together veterans and community members to examine the experiences of service members who identify themselves as female, Black, Native American, LGBTQ, or an immigrant, the dynamics, reasoning, and strength behind serving a country that does not always serve you in return." Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
"You and Mr. Fox identified this as one of the craziest grants at any age?"
"Yes, it appears so."
"Why did you do that?"
Because it explicitly says LGBTQ.
"Do you have any history in, like, let's say, scholarly peer review?"
"No."
"Okay. So, but this judgment call was made by you and your personal judgment combined with Justin's personal judgment to cancel grants based on DEI?"
"Yes."
"Okay. Do you think it's inappropriate in any way that someone in their 20s with no experience with grants or federal government was making personal judgment calls about what grants to cancel?"
"Actually, no, I don't think it's inappropriate."
"Okay. Jesus. Why not?"
"Objection."
I think a person can have enough judgment from reading books and being well-informed outside of traditional experience to make judgment calls about obvious things like a grant that literally lists DEI in its description to know whether it violates an executive order."
I'm saying books because you said books. What books would you have read that would have informed your opinion on what grants to cancel based on DEI?
There were no books.
There was no books. He learned enough from books to know when a grant should be canceled. Really, what books? None books.
"If it's not about a white heterosexual male, it must be canceled."
It says LGBTQ right there. That's got to go. Now, apparently Nate Kavanaugh was the smarter of the two between him and Justin Fox. For his part, Fox turned to OpenAI's ChatGPT to sift through thousands of grants awarded by the National Endowment for the Humanities to figure out what to cut, because apparently they didn't even know what DEI was or even stood for, it seems, at least if the following exchange between Fox and the attorneys is any indication. According to court filings, the men prompted ChatGPT by asking, quote, "From the perspective of someone looking to identify DEI grants, does this involve DEI? Respond in less than 120 characters. Begin with yes or no." That's what they told AI to how to help them. Note, this exchange between the attorney and Fox, Jeremy Fox, Justin Fox, is not a montage like the previous clip. This appears to be a straight deposition exchange between the lawyers and the Doge bro, Justin Fox. The silence that you hear at times is super genius Fox's brain, I think, trying to come up with words to say.
How do you interpret DEI?
There was, the EO explicitly laid out the details. I don't remember it off the top of my head.
It's okay. I'm asking for your understanding of it.
Yeah, my understanding was exactly what was written in the EO.
Okay, so can you...
I don't remember what was in the EO.
So right now, do you have an understanding of what DEI is?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your understanding as you sit here today in this deposition?
Well, it was exactly what was written in the EO. And so any time that we would look at a grant through the lens of complying with an executive order, we would just refer back to the EO and assess if this grant had relation to it.
Okay, but I guess I'm stepping back from your methodology strictly in terminating the grants. Do you have an understanding as you sit here today of what DEI means?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your understanding of what it means?
Well, it is exactly what was written in the EO.
EO being executive order, I should have said that in advance, but he has no clue. He doesn't even know what it means. He can't even say, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's whatever's in the EO. He was repeatedly pressed by attorneys to explain certain funding decisions, such as defunding a language center. He described as a, quote, wasteful, non-critical spend, or defunding projects related to Black history and civil rights. And yes, even the Holocaust, because I guess DEI.
Why is a documentary about Holocaust survivors DEI?
Objection.
It's the gender-based story that's inherently discriminatory to focus on this specific group.
It's inherently discriminatory to focus on what specific group?
The gender-based, so females during the Holocaust.
And you believe that that's inherently discriminatory?
I'm just saying that's what it's focused on.
Sure.
But and this is related to DEI.
Right. But you just used the term inherently discriminatory. What did you mean by that?
It's focusing on DEI principles, gender being one of them.
So a documentary that's about women would be DEI?
Objection.
Is that fair to say?
No.
Okay. So tell me why what I just said isn't DEI, but what you just said is DEI.
Jackson.
It's a Jewish, specifically focused on Jewish cultures and amplifying the marginalized voices of the females in that culture. It's inherently related to DEI for...
DEI for the Holocaust. We have to... Because they're talking about women in the Holocaust. That's obviously
discriminatory, wasteful.
Yeah. He went on to say that that none of this was important because it wasn't important to all of humanity. And when he was asked by the attorney, he said, well, did I say that? Yeah, and they read it back to him. Well, that's not what I meant. Sure, the Holocaust is important to all of humanity, but anyway, these are the super geniuses at work that super genius Elon Musk, super genius Donald Trump put in charge of Lord knows how much of the federal government at this point. These little punks were given access to cut billions of dollars of the nation's and had access to the nation's most sensitive data. The Social Security master files, IRS master file databases. Just unbelievable. And we're just beginning to get a glimpse of who these people are and the damage that they have caused and how unbelievably stupid they are. Anyway, according to the deposition, some of the supposedly saved funds that they didn't save were spent on Trump's promised National Garden of American Heroes, a sculpture garden to commemorate the country's 250th anniversary. And I don't know about you, but on our 250th birthday as a nation, I could not be more proud of it. Green News Report is next. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. My thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help Desi Doyen and I stay on your public airwaves. You're the only one that keeps us here. Thank you. A very busy day. Let's get straight to it. Our latest Green News Report.
It's the first nationwide blackout since the U.S. effectively shut off the flow of oil to Cuba.
Cuba's nationwide electrical grid collapses.
We risk going from short-term disruption to long-term structural damage to the oil market.
Big Oil worried Trump's war on Iran will cause long-term oil demand destruction.
Good.
Plus, the number of extreme heat days has doubled around the world. New study finds.
Not as good. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Trump yesterday said, you know, United States is the biggest oil producer in the world still. He said, when oil prices go up, we make a lot of money. Who's we?
Good question. This is your Green News Report.
I think ExxonMobil makes a lot of money. We dig for change in the cup holder. I don't.
Okay, Desi Doyen, last week we warned that this week would be extremely bad in many ways for weather around the nation, but we've got some other news breaking first, it looks like.
Yes, unfortunately we do. So while Iran is using energy as a weapon to retaliate against the United States and Donald Trump's war against them, Trump is using energy as a weapon against Cuba to provoke regime change there.
Huh.
In January, Trump effectively shut off the flow of oil to Cuba, blocking the island nation from receiving oil imports and imposing punitive tariffs on any country that supplies oil, triggering crippling fuel shortages. On Monday, officials reported that Cuba's electric grid suffered a total collapse, the first national collapse since Trump launched the blockade, which has deepened Cuba's energy and economic crises. Trump is also giving a pass to Russia's use of energy as a weapon. The administration temporarily lifted sanctions on Russian oil that were imposed after Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022. Allowing it to be shipped to buyers around the world gives a boost to the Russian economy and President Vladimir Putin. The administration hopes that the move will help lower global oil prices that have soared as a consequence of Trump's war on Iran due to Iran's effective closure of the Strait of Hormuz.
Hey, here's an idea. Why doesn't everybody move to renewables and then we don't have to rely on creeps like Iran or Russia or the United States to keep the energy flowing?
Funny you should mention that.
Oh?
Even though the oil industry is pulling in huge profits from higher oil and natural gas prices, the Wall Street Journal reports that big oil CEOs have expressed concern to the Trump White House that a prolonged closure of the strait will lead to sustained elevated prices on gasoline and home heating fuel, which in turn, they worry, could result in long-term destruction of demand for fossil fuel products, pushing more consumers to electric vehicles, electric heat pumps, rooftop solar, and the like.
Oh, wouldn't that be sad?
In other news, across the United States, it has been every kind of extreme weather all at once. Hawaii has been grappling with days of relentless rain that has flooded roads and washed out homes. In California, a record-breaking extreme heat wave. The Midwest paralyzed by a historic blizzard. High winds and tornadoes for the East Coast. Half the country in drought. Now, climate scientists predicted that we would see extreme swings intensifying the impacts of extreme weather due to man-made global warming driven by the burning of fossil fuels. Plus, a growing body of scientific research links melting of Arctic sea ice to the alteration in the course of the jet stream that drives weather systems across the U.S.
Basically, we're messing with the jet stream with all of this, so of course, weather is going wacky everywhere. I realize that's not a very scientific way to put it, but is that about right anyway?
Yes. Extreme heat is also getting extremier. The number of days where extreme...
That's not very scientific either.
The number of days where extreme heat makes ordinary activities too dangerous has doubled over the world over the past 75 years, according to new research. It's the first study to document the consequences of rising temperatures on everyday life, not just survival. Overall, more than a third of the global population resides in regions where heat severely affects daily life. And the study found it was particularly impactful on people over 65. But climate scientist Dr. Frederica Otto has some positive thoughts about that.
As soon as we stop burning fossil fuels, global mean temperature will stop rising. We're not locked in from a physical point of view. We are maybe locked in because of the political situation we've got ourselves into, but we're not locked in from a physical point of view.
I hope she's right.
Yes.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.brandblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at Green News Report. I'm Brand Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do.
We gotta get out of this place. Thank you very much to our producer, Desi Doyen, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always appreciated and an honor. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider hitting a donate button to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at the Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Girl, there's a better life for me and you.